KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.
Broadcasting live from South Napa Century Center.
Gates Estates Sotheby's International Realty has an amazing team of locally experienced and knowledgeable agents that exceed the high standards and qualifications necessary to assure the ultimate goal of assisting clients buying or selling homes throughout the entire Napa Valley and beyond. Whether now or sometime in the future, remember to consider Gates Estates Sotheby's International Realty, the luxury brand with the local focus that you deserve for any real estate related matters. Visit GatesEstatesSIR.com to connect when it makes sense for you, or call 707-944-0888. That's 707-944-0888. DRE number 01874685.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
It's time for All Things Napa with your host, Lee W. Miller, a community leader, full-time realtor, and a serial networker passionate about promoting local businesses. Let's learn what's new in the Napa business scene today.
Welcome, welcome to All Things Napa. Boy, it's good to be back in the studio once again. I am your host, Lee W. Miller. Why? Because that's my son playing those drums. And I do love that music. And I love my son. How is everybody doing today? You know, as the intro from Lauren there said, that I am a full-time realtor. But, you know, we just normally never talk about real estate on this show. But with the coronavirus and all the things associated with that, real estate has had an impact. And so a little departure from our normal, not really discussing real estate. That's what we're going to be talking about today. So we have in the studio, Mr. Kelly Norris, the broker owner of Gates Estates Sotheby's International Realty. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
And we have another real estate expert. So we have three real estate experts here in the studio today. Mr. Todd Wenzel, attorney at law, specializing in real estate law. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Lee.
Nice to have you guys in the studio today. So we're just going to kind of make this a free-for-all and a three-way conversation as opposed to strictly settling on one guest or the other. Kelly, why don't you start us off? I know that there's good things and bad things to report, so take your pick.
Well, I mean, obviously, we've had a disruption, like every other industry, but we also have some good things happening. But if you want to bookend the bad and the good, you know, initially things, you know, dropped off pretty hard, and right now the inventory is about 50% of normal for, and then, you know, and actually I use normal as, you know, kind of lightly because it's 50% of a year ago, which was still not normal inventory. So we were low last year. We're even lower this year, of course. And, the buyer need is still there and very active. Most websites that I'm tracking have people looking at homes. The website traffic is up 600%. Wow. So people are still looking.
So for our listeners that might not understand the impact of low inventory, why don't you cover that just to make sure that we're all on the same page? Because some people might say, oh, low inventory. I knew it was bad.
Well,
Corona's fault.
Well, it is certainly a contributing factor, but the fact is that last year we had low inventory, and when you do, you have a high buyer demand, that's typically a good seller's market. And we started this year in a good market, and then this happened, and then people pulled off their listings temporarily during this period, even though now we can show virtually and now even in person. But it's even hyper low, which means that, and a lot of people, and I'll go into this as we go along, but there's people that have been trying to compare this to 2008, and there's really no similarity at all.
And I understand the reason why there's certainly no comparison. But again, for our listeners, make sure that they understand how we, as in the real estate industry, caused 2008 versus now, were virtually a victim, and what that difference is.
Yeah, so 2008 was a self-inflicted wound, basically. The financing, all you had to do is fog a mirror. You could get a loan back then.
Right.
And then it just basically, everybody knows how the financing or institutions had low liquidity, and it affected directly the real estate market. This time it's affecting every market. And so we're all a victim, not just the real estate market, but the great thing is back then in 2008, when things kind of went south, nearly 80% of the market was subprime. Now it's less than 1%.
Subprime, yeah. Being those loans that were...
People shouldn't have gotten loans.
Right. Stated income,
yeah.
And the so-called ninja loans, ninja being an acronym for no income, no job approved.
Right.
Yeah.
And now it's not that way. And people are holding mortgages now, are able to qualify and make their payments. And so we aren't having strategic foreclosures and all that sort of thing like we had back then.
Right.
So now we have, to back up a little bit, we had a ton of overbuilding then, lots and lots of supply, and then the demand fell off, and now it's just flipped. So we have high demand and hyper low inventory, which means that they're completely polar opposite of what was going on back then. So I just don't see people want to, I think, emotionally kind of tie it to something that they know, but that's not what's happening. I think that we're going to come out of this thing in really, really good shape.
And I certainly understand how some buyers and or sellers that have suspended their search or suspended their sales efforts over the last 60 days just because of the uncertainty of things. And for a variety of reasons, that made sense to them. I did a little bit of research in preparation of this, and I knew that things weren't as bleak and horrible as some believe it, but I was pretty surprised to learn that in March, now I'm talking about, this is for the North Bay area, Napa, Solano, Sonoma, Yolo, Lake, and Mendocino counties. In March, the median home prices in that area actually increased 2.4% over what they were in February. So we're talking about the height of the panic and the concern over the virus and the shelter in place, and yet home prices actually increased. And I know that part of that is going to be attributed to the low inventory because of, basic supply and demand. But also the number of units sold this March versus March of 2019, that was a 2.9, almost a 3% increase, even when we're in the thick of this crisis.
Well, that just shows you. I mean, going into this thing, we were very healthy, and it was continuing. And honestly, for 10 years past 2008, we were in a steady, well, I can't say 10 years, probably 8 years. About 2010, things started to get good. And we had double digit increases every year. And that, as far as values are concerned, because we had time, we had to make up the ground we lost. But now, you know, we were showing, you know, a flat to an, you know, 2 to 3% increase as far as property values are concerned. And then we had a lot of demand. And then this happened. And just to show you, then the rest of the economy was doing really well. And that's why people were buying, because the unemployment was low. And people were making good money and able to qualify for loans. And we were continuing to grow our sales. And because of this, the stimulus that's going on now, I think people are a little bit better shape than they were in 2008. There was nothing really available to anyone, especially in our industry.
Sure.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
Have you found that that there are sellers, as far as you know, that have temporarily, as you mentioned, taken their property off the market and they're just waiting until the shelter-in-place orders go away before they put their property back on the market?
Yeah, we've seen some of that. A lot of people have pulled, not a lot of people, I should say, maybe 25% maybe of what we had going in, it pulled off. The ones that have stayed in there have actually done extremely well. We've sold several properties in our office virtually, so which is kind of nice. And then the people that have
actually sold. It's not virtually sold.
No. Well, we sold them.
The virtually was virtual.
Right.
Yeah.
Good point.
I virtually made $1 million.
Yeah, I virtually got a mortgage. I wish my mortgage was virtual right now. But no, I mean they looked virtually and then. And then made an offer, and then it actually got to the closing table and closed. So, right. I mean, that's a good thing.
And did they never actually view the house? Because I had some clients that really were very interested in a particular property, but they decided not to pursue it. And I said, you can always make an offer sight unseen, but contingent upon you being able to have a walkthrough, obviously, before close of escrow.
Right.
And in the cases that you're talking about, did they forego that walkthrough?
Some did, some didn't.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And then now, of course, a few days ago, they, were able to go out and show property in person.
Right.
Following protocol. And we've seen an influx, back to your question, Todd, of people going back on the market. Not full force, but we've had some that pulled off that are going back on because we can now show the properties in person, and we, just have to wear our masks, gloves and shoe coverings.
Right. And there's probably listeners that are scratching their head based on what you just said, but let's be really clear. This is not the real estate industry that has determined this. This is the state and the county ordinances or rules and regulations here. They have considered real estate an essential business, therefore allowing showing of property so long as we meet those protocols.
And that's in Napa County.
Right. Napa County is about the most relaxed in the state for that. But again, we're wiping down the lockbox and the key, and we're wearing face masks and
gloves and shoe coverings.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially if it's in an occupied home. Right.
You can't really go in and touch anything, unless you have your gloves on. You want to look in a, open a door, of course.
Right.
But we're taking all the proper measures to make sure that, we follow protocol. But again, people are pulling back into the market. There are people, however, that are on the market that live in the property that still are reluctant to let anyone in at the moment. So we still are dealing with that. So it's ultimately up to the seller to see, if they don't want anyone in there, they're not going to allow them.
Yeah, county ordinances are one thing, but obviously the seller always has the last say and thing.
Sure. Did that answer your question?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was going to say another positive thing about the COVID-19 pandemic in terms of the real estate market, at least what I've heard, is that people have more time to search for homes because they may not be out working or driving around. Now they're on the computers and they're doing more searches, whether it may be idle searches or whether intent real estate searches. But I think you may have mentioned this, that Zillow searches are up.
Say, it's off the scale. I mean, people are sitting home and they're on their computers and, you know, and they're just looking around at homes, right. You know. And the people that have stayed in there and left their, you know, their house on the market are competing with less inventory, which means that they're going to probably have a better chance of selling.
Right.
We've a point I wanted to make, we've had a couple of sales recently that had multiple offers that went over asking. So that's still out there.
Right. Well, and like you say, lower inventory because some people have pulled back. As a matter of fact, in March, there was a 5.2% reduction of the number of homes available for sale. And yet, in spite of that, there was a 20% increase of sales in March. So the demand is certainly there.
It's huge. It's huge. That's why I think, and this is just me, so I'm not, you know, I'm not an expert or anything. I just see what
I
see.
Oh, I already said all three of us were experts. We can't go back on that.
I'm an expert in my own mind, I guess. But, you know, the way I see these numbers is when we're finally through this, things should bounce back in a big way. There's a number of people that they're out there just kind of waiting, you know. But I can also say that the people that aren't waiting, that are busy online, to your point, Todd, and they're online and they find a home they really like, they're making offers. And of course, the time frames of inspections and walkthroughs and those things are extended because it's a little more challenging right now with the banking industry still. There's issues there, and it takes longer to close, but people are buying homes.
And I've seen a California Association of Realtors forum specifically designed now for, you know, built-in extension of times due to the coronavirus.
Right. Yeah, it's basically a coronavirus addendum amendment that you can, if you're in contract now, you can use that form to, you know, to extend your time frames. Yeah. That's correct.
Yeah, there's at least four, maybe five coronavirus forms from the California Association of Realtors.
They got them out fast.
Yeah. And, of course, Carr loves to put out new forms.
Well, the one that we're using now called the Coronavirus Property Entry Advisory and Declaration, they have to name them really long, and then they call it a PEAD for short. That's the document that we have to use to be able to enter someone's home so they can track the people that have been in and out. So, you know, if you were to show a home today, you would have to get that signed by your clients. You would have to initial it as the agent, and then they would know who's been in and out of the house.
Buyer, seller, and agent all have to acknowledge that form.
That's correct, yeah.
And obviously in our crazy litigious society, nothing personal, Todd. There's a big CYA aspect to that whole thing. So. Oh,
absolutely, yeah. So you don't want agents. Well, Carr is there to protect the consumers and the agents, but it is an association of realtors, so they do primarily look out for the protection of the agents, and it is a liability deterrence, and that way everybody signs off on everything and everybody's on notice.
Right.
And you've got a lot of forms there that you need to discuss too that are unrelated to what we're doing. What are some of those?
So, yeah, I suggested when Lee invited me here today that I'd talk about more residential and commercial leases and how the pandemic has impacted the rental market. And there is the California Apartment Association, CAA, is a good resource for landlords. And most landlords, if they're not members, they should be, just because there's a plethora of information and support. One of the documents that CAA has prepared is a payment plan agreement. This was actually, it's been in place for a while, unrelated to pandemic-related needs of tenants that need to restructure their lease payments. But there's a good payment plan agreement there by CAA. It talks about past due amounts, a new payment plan. There's also other built-in provisions in there where it's an informal arrangement between the landlord and tenant, so the you know, neither side can hold the other party to that. It's, you know, supposed to be temporary. But then speaking of CAR, California Association of Realtors, they've also, this month, April 2020, prepared a coronavirus rent payment delay and repayment agreement. Another one of those long,
right.
This is form RPD for rent payment delay. This is even a little more thorough than the CAA form, but it has things like, all right, there's a delay notification by that the tenant has to give the landlord, the stated reason for the rent payment delay, there's boxes to check, proof that the tenant is unable to pay. So, you know, it's most of the things that, you know, Governor Newsom's order about eviction moratoriums and that sort of a thing that he initially issued on March 18th, I believe it was, that a tenant can't just wave the white flag and say, oh, COVID-19, I can't pay rent. There is a proof element to it. And this is built into the CAR form that I've talked about. So, yeah, I mean, there are good resources out there online, and they're both they're for the benefit of both tenants and landlords. And people, if they haven't come across them and if they're in need of them, they should search it, check it out.
I think the thing to know there is just to, if you're confused about what's going on, which most of us are, to reach out to someone, you know, like Todd or myself or you, Lee, where we can point people in the right direction.
Right. And if the conversation thus far for our listeners has stimulated any questions in your mind, always reach out to me, LeeWMiller@gmail.com or 707-266-1585. And then, of course, we'll give Todd's information too, because if anyone contacts me about leases, commercial or otherwise, I'll just give them your information, Todd.
No problem.
My expertise lies elsewhere, expertly.
Well, the best part of what we do is, you know, when we get something that's out of our hands or, you know, out of our knowledge base, then we turn to the legal, which, you know, Todd
right.
is. So, and hopefully somebody can find the right answer with everybody in the room here, you know.
Yeah,
for
sure.
We'll just find somebody that knows the answers.
Well, I do have some questions of Todd about Newsom's forgiving of the rent. So we're going to get into that when we come back from a quick little break here. So stand by for some more stimulating conversation about real estate and whether or not rents are going to be forgiven or just put into forbearance. So we shall see, because Todd's going to give us all that. Right, Todd?
Oh, yeah. All of it.
Okay. He's not even looking at me panicked like he wasn't expecting that. He's got this. All right. We'll be right back.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
Gates Estates Sotheby's International Realty has an amazing team of locally experienced and knowledgeable agents that exceed the high standards and qualifications necessary to assure the ultimate goal of assisting clients buying or selling homes throughout the entire Napa Valley and beyond. Whether now or sometime in the future, remember to consider Gates Estates Sotheby's International Realty, the luxury brand with the local focus that you deserve for any real estate related matters. Visit GatesEstatesSIR.com to connect when it makes sense for you, or call 707-944-0888. That's 707-944-0888.
DRE number 01874685.
Okay, welcome back. Welcome back to All Things Napa. If you're just joining us, we are sitting here with Kelly Norris, the broker owner of Gates Estates Sotheby's International Realty. Also happens to be where I hang my real estate license. And also Todd Wenzel, attorney at law specializing in real estate law. And we were talking about renters, landlords and renters, whether it be commercial or residential. And of course, there is the ability to not pay your mortgage, not pay your rent for a little while. But now what I saw, there's a little new wrinkle where there is a contingent of the population that is expressing their desire that Gavin Newsom mandate that they be forgiven as opposed to forbeared. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in Gavin Newsom's head, but I would think he would be very trepidatious about forgiving rent completely. What it is now is rent obligations are postponed at least till the end of this calendar year. I don't think he's updated that. If he has, it'll have been relatively recently.
Yeah, and just making that clear, this is people making this request. He hasn't made any decision yet, but man, I sure as heck hope he doesn't just do that to the landlords. That could be catastrophic.
Right. I mean, I'm sympathetic to the tenants too, for sure. But you know, there are some small-time mom-and-pop type landlords where they may have one rental unit and they're on a fixed income, plus they expect the rent. And if that rent is completely forgiven, that's going to hurt these landlords too. So the heart is in the right place to postpone rent financial obligations for tenants. And it's warranted, but I'm concerned about if the rent were completely forgiven, how that would impact the property ownership market.
Right.
Well, I think that there's a good example of that in the regular mortgage market, where they initially said, okay, you can get a forbearance on your mortgage, and then get it. At the end of that forbearance time, then you can either you can do a loan modification and throw it on the back of your loan, or it's due all at once. Most of them are going to be put on the back of the loan. But what they didn't consider is the loan servicers that were holding that paper. So basically what's happened is...
Not the original loan entity.
Yeah. So they literally were sitting there, wait a second, our income is gone now. And so that's the same thing you're talking about in the rental market. If you allow them to just not make a payment and never make that payment, then someone's going to suffer.
Right. And obviously people who have lost their jobs that are in a rental, they're struggling. And once they get back on their feet after things normalize after this pandemic, everyone is going to be a little bit behind in terms of their financial situation, renters and service people in particular. So it will take some time for things to normalize and get back. Whether that'll be through the end of this year or whether they may need more time, I think it's going to ultimately prompt a lot of renegotiation. And it comes down to communication, as does everything, between the landlord and tenant. The tenant's going to need more time to make up lost payments and rent. Then they should just reach out to the landlord, and I think... God willing, everybody be reasonable in this situation, and everybody will be interested in renegotiating if necessary.
So you just used the word time. One of the forms that talks about the order to postpone or delay payments, I was in my preparation here reading through that form, and it said... Even under the order, the tenant would remain obligated to repay full rent in a timely manner and could still face eviction after the enforcement moratorium is lifted. Could you be more vague?
Yeah, lawyers love that.
Timely manner.
It all comes down to reasonableness, and it's
that's much more specific. Thank you for clarifying that. I told you he was an expert.
It's true. It's vague, but... if it got in front of a judge or a jury, people would just use common sense as to what's reasonable. and whether that's 60 days, 90 days. You know, I think there is a possibility where, tenants might take advantage of this situation more so than the situation warrants. And I don't think that's going to happen, but I think it may. One of the things I did put down as a talking point for today is my guess is this will lead to litigation. There'll be a few cases where a landlord will believe that a tenant has overplayed the COVID-19 pandemic and how it's impacted their life. And when they ask for proof, maybe that proof won't be given, but the tenant maybe in this instance wouldn't pay rent. And so I think in those extreme cases, we're going to see some lawsuits out of this. I would proceed with caution if I was representing a landlord, because the sympathy factor is definitely going to be there with the tenants, as it usually is anyways.
Especially in California.
Yes. But hopefully everybody will act appropriately. And I think they have been, at least in Napa. I think everybody's been pretty mindful and been respectful of the shelter-in-place orders and been compassionate to those who have lost their jobs and that sort of a thing. But my guess is, at least throughout the state, there will be some litigation that results between landlord and tenants as a result of tenants defaulting on one or more provisions in their
lease. And then you're assuming, therefore, then a precedent would be set and less going to trial and litigation and everything, because the judge will just say, hey, based on Wenzel versus Norris.
Some landlords will lose and some tenants will probably lose.
I can feel more forms coming.
Yeah, exactly.
Just more forms.
Right.
Yeah.
So, in the commercial context, I think there will be some litigation, probably more so there, because the tenants and landlords tend to be a little bit more litigious and have more money to spend on litigation. It was a term I used once that Lee kind of caught Lee off guard when I said litigation budget in a conversation we were having. He said, oh my God, people actually have budgets for litigation. I think the force majeure clauses in the commercial leases, which most commercial leases should have those or do have those, will probably come into play with this pandemic. Now, as we all know, for those who don't, force majeure clauses have to do with acts of God generally, and they were initially drafted to give both tenants and other parties who are involved in commercial contracts a break, due to things such as extreme weather, hurricanes, floods, earthquakes, and other natural catastrophes. Those clauses, just by way of background, were then later broadened to include such unanticipated events such as energy blackouts, lockouts, strikes, work stoppages, civil disturbances or riots, and that sort of a thing. And then more recently, now you're seeing these force majeure clauses, just like everything, are getting larger and bigger, but now you're seeing them including acts of terrorism, loss or malfunctions of utilities or computer services. I haven't seen a force majeure clause that has pandemic in it.
Which is really surprising, because Bill Gates and others have predicted this for at least the last 5 to 6 years. So why wouldn't it include that? But before you, not that you can answer that because you're not Mr. Force Majeure, but you are enough to tell our listeners what that clause, kind of a definition of it.
Yeah.
So that we don't lose a bunch of listeners.
Well, right. Yeah. And when I've drafted force majeure clauses, which I have, and even recently, I've included, phrases such as including but not limited to these types of events. So it's not, it shouldn't be pigeonholed and limited to any particular force majeure event that's actually listed. It's these types of events or similar like kind of events. And I think the pandemic falls in
that
category.
They're going to have to include this. Right. Because now, we're basically in a work stoppage, not by any thing we've done.
Right. And no union strike, right?
No, it'd be the same thing as if a tornado came through and wiped out a community.
Exactly.
If, you know,
Right.
I see that to be similar.
I mean, maybe it's not an act of God if you are a conspiracy theorist and you think that this virus was, you know, intentionally caused or created, but I don't think anyone really believes that. But
well, even if you did, the effect is the same.
Right.
You know.
The insurance industry, though, they've thought about the pandemics, and now there are pandemic exclusions and policies. So, like, if there's a loss of business interruption coverage, but they may have an exclusion for business interruption loss due to a pandemic. So the insurance industry is always one step ahead, but that's a topic for another discussion.
Well, Bernie Narvaez will be on the show next week. He's our insurance guru. Oh,
make a note. Segue right there.
Yeah. All right. That'll wrap up. No, I'm just kidding. You know, I just called Bernie the insurance guru. I should use the same term, though. He is the insurance expert.
Oh, there you go.
There we go. So you didn't really give us the definition of force majeure.
Well, I thought I kind of did.
All the French I know.
Yeah. Caveat emptor. Essentially, it is an event that disrupts the ability of one party or the other to perform under a contract.
Okay.
That's my definition. And
it even uses like act of God type of stuff within the terminology, right?
Yeah,
right.
Like it'll say, and other, quote, acts of God,
right.
End quote. Right. So in the commercial context, at least, you know, a force majeure event wouldn't avoid or terminate the commercial tenant's obligation to pay the rent. It would just, again, postpone it. The inability to pay rent is not a force majeure event. It's obviously, it's a result of a force majeure event. And again, unless the force majeure event completely damages the rental premises, it's only going to postpone the obligation, not completely eliminate it.
Earlier, you said something to do with it's still going to require proof of a tenant to show. Do you have any details on that or speculation as to what proof might be required and how that's going to be presented?
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious example, especially you know, for a tenant, would be a termination letter from their employer, or submission of unemployment application. That sort of a thing, or you know, whether they're furloughed or anything like that, which some sort of document from written document from an employer, or other provider of finances, whether it's a friend or somebody where they're getting money in that proves that that money is no longer coming in.
So it wouldn't delve in as deeply as, we need to see your bank account. And yeah, you lost your job, but you got $500,000 in cash in your checking account. Therefore, you're not, qualified to.
Like I said, there may be abilities to abuse the system here, but I think if the tenant is claiming they've lost their job, and if they can't supply a written document from their employer stating that, then I think a landlord would be right to be able to say, okay, well, I need some sort of proof. How about a bank statement?
Okay.
That's my thought anyway, but
I think that's a TBD.
Oh, yeah, that's why I ask. It's purely speculation on his part, but but he is the expert.
He is right now.
Well, and another thing I think is we can talk about is, not only is there a rent abatement aspect of Governor Newsom's order, there's also the eviction moratorium for failure to pay rent. So across the board, nobody can be evicted in the state of California because they haven't paid rent. But that opens up another issue. What if they are breaching another term of their lease? They're creating a nuisance. Can they be evicted for that now, or is it eviction moratorium regardless of the reasons?
Doesn't it have the verbiage of for non-payment?
It does.
It doesn't go into all these other things.
I believe Governor Newsom's order does talk about that, but then I saw an ordinance that the County of Alameda issued, and it said, regardless of the reason, you can't evict a tenant.
That's what I thought it was. And even if it wasn't, if I'm a renter and a not so great guy and I don't lose my job, everything's fine, but I've got 20 pit bulls that are barking constantly and threatening neighbors and being a nuisance, I just stop paying the rent. And then I say, oh, you can't evict me. It's not my dogs. It's not the nuisance. It's because I'm not paying the rent.
Right. So there may be some evictions that will test the expanse of Governor Newsom's order and to see whether or not if the tenant is alleged to have been violating another provision other than non-payment of rent, whether or not that will get processed through the eviction.
Todd, your phone's going to be ringing off the hook over the next few months.
Good point, Kelly. Go ahead and give your information so that anyone listening that has these questions.
Sure. Todd Wenzel, the formal name of the business is Wenzel Law. My email address is todd@wenzellawoffices. That's WENZELLAWOFFICES. Phone number is 707-639-2097. Feel free to drop me a line either via email or telephone, and happy to answer any questions I can.
And if you're driving and or didn't get that, LeeWMiller@gmail.com, and I'll connect you.
Yeah, Lee's email is a lot easier to remember.
But don't forget that W, because the LeeMiller@gmail.com, he gets really irritated when he gets my emails. And in 20 years, he's only forwarded me two of them that he felt were important.
And where is he?
I have no idea. He did not wish to be friendly.
Oh.
This looks important.
I always wondered why you added the middle initial, and now I know.
That's why.
That's why.
It wasn't available.
So, but I did want to talk a little bit about mortgages, going back to the real estate world. So, interest rates have obviously dropped, and I would think that would be a motivating factor for maybe buyers who may be on the fence.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, today CNBC had an article on there that they posted on their website that refis have started exploding again from that standpoint, and they're up, I can't remember exactly the percentage, but pretty, I think, double digits.
Every mortgage broker that I know is working crazy long hours. They're just inundated. And with that kind of a demand, there are certain loan products that they are no longer doing, such as buyer assistance programs, because those people that do not have a down payment, but they qualify to receive a down payment assistance through the city of Napa or the county of Napa, those applicants are basically being put on the back burner right now because they're so inundated with the, for lack of a better word, stronger buyers.
Well, it's... their industry has been disrupted like every industry.
Sure.
And so that whole thing, there's a lot of money being floated into the system. The people that they end up selling the mortgages to and stuff like that, the mortgage servicing companies, there's issues there as well, like we talked about earlier. And so it's I can tell you, based on some people I know that are in the mortgage business, things are taking a little longer than normal, and sometimes a lot longer than normal.
Well, appraisals alone, there's a lot of appraisers that are, I'm not going in anybody's house, and you can't make me. And then one of my clients, that appraisal took 6 weeks from the time that it was requested till the time it was performed. And it was supposed to be a 3-day turnaround time, and it was a 10-day turnaround time after they were in the property. The appraiser required that all doors be opened, all lights be turned on, including exterior doors. So they said they didn't want to touch anything except their iPad while they walked through. So I don't know if they did measurements or, with those laser things, maybe they were doing a measurements.
Yeah, and
with
the laser. Then you have the inspectors, the same thing with them. I mean, some of them are saying, fine, but others are saying, no, I'm going to wait. But honestly, now I'm going to go into my opinion of what things, I think we know a lot more about what's going on right now, personally. And I'm not saying this for anyone else.
At the 50-minute mark, ladies and gentlemen, Kelly can't hold it back anymore.
Well,
you're going to go ahead and let us know.
Listen, we've learned a lot. And I think most people know how to be safe, you know, the masks, the gloves, whatever you need to do to be safe, hand sanitizer and washing your hands all the time. And, you know, I don't see any reason why we can't start going back to work. I'm so ready to go back to regular work, I can't even stand it. And I know most of my friends and colleagues are in the same boat. I think we know more and we can be safe by doing it. I'm not saying open everything up. I mean, there's, you know.
That's the distinction I wanted to make sure, and I'm glad you said it. But, you know, there are people that they make a comment on Facebook. I think we need to start slowly getting back to normal, provided that we do it safely. And then they get bombarded with attacks that, you know, don't you care about people? And it's like, no, I just said provided we could do it safely, and you ignored that part.
They just are turning everything into a political argument. And this, in my eyes, it's not a political one way or the other.
No.
It's a matter of life. You know, I think that there's a danger in being cooped up for 2 months or more. And, you know, I mean, part of our lives, part of the things that we get the joy out of our life, especially in real estate, is helping other people. That's what we do for a living.
Right.
And we can't do that. It's been completely, you know, disrupted. I think that there's ways of getting back to work and doing it safely. The people that I'm super worried about are the restaurants of the world and the people that have lots of people. You know, their business models are dependent on turnover. So I'm really worried about them. And I, you know, from our standpoint, we've made changes in the way we show properties and all that. I mean, everything we do, signatures and all those things, paperwork is all done electronically. So that's an easy situation for us. There's other industries though that I'm fearful for that are going to have a hard time getting back to normal.
I completely agree. I also think that as a result of this, there are certain industries that have transitioned quite smoothly into Zoom meetings and doing things online, and they may never return to the old way that they were doing business.
Our offices have regular Zoom meetings, and most of the people I know are having regular Zoom meetings.
Right.
I think it's actually a great thing. But at the same time, you know, there are companies and their businesses are interaction businesses.
Oh, certainly.
And those are tough. You know, so I'm worried about that.
I'm in a rare category where I've been working from home since 1987. So if you're not aware, that's before fax machines, let alone voicemail. And a regular routine of my day was to call the office 4 or 5 times a day and have Betty read me the little pink slip messages of the people who had called me, because there was no mobile phone.
You're dating yourself.
Either.
Were you using Morse code back then?
Smoke signals.
Dit, 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 dot, 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 dit.
Yeah. Well, as you were talking about, Kelly, I was just mindful of, you know, states like Georgia who have already started to open up. So they will be able to see whether or not their little experiment coming out, opening up some of their industries early, actually works, or if they're going to get a rebound. So I don't know. I think it's good that California is being a little more conservative. Of course, we've had more cases here, but
But per capita, we've had less, less. That's why I think, you know, the things that we've done, in some ways, you know, I think we've done a pretty good job as a state of keeping things in check.
Tamped down.
You know, yeah, I really do. At the same time, because of those numbers, and Napa County specifically, I don't remember what the number is, how many cases we've had, but it's what, 48 or
60 or
64,
thereabouts,
I don't remember. But, you know, and so that's a pretty low number. And, you know, and I think it's because we're all being so careful about wearing our masks and everything and stuff. So I think we've done a really good job.
Talk about success. An unofficial shout out to the veterans home in Yountville. I believe there's 7 state-run veterans homes in California, and Yountville is the only one that has yet to have a single case.
Wow. That's
and
awesome.
In that environment of assisted living, that's just incredible. So
that's great.
A huge shout out to that staff, including the dietary department.
Yeah, you plugged your son earlier. You might as well plug your wife. Right. You know, just like there, she's doing a great job up there. I know she always does.
Yeah. All right, we've only got a minute or two left. That went by really quickly. Is there anything you guys want to add before we wrap it up for the day?
I mean, just from my end, again, for tenants or landlords that have questions about what they can or should be doing, obviously the internet is a great resource, but you have to sometimes dive a little deeper than a cursory, you know, search. Check it out. If you have any other questions, again, my email is Todd, T-O-D-D, at Wenzel, W-E-N-Z-E-L.
Do not spell law offices again.
Lawoffices.com.
If they can't spell lawoffices.com, they should not be contacting you. There, I gave my opinion too, Kelly.
Wow. Staying away from that.
Any last comments from you, Mr. Norris?
No, I just want to finish up by saying, you know, listen, I think we're doing a good job as a community. And I'm ready. I know I am ready to get back safely to work. And I think that a lot of people are in the same boat. And I'm hoping that sooner than later.
I couldn't agree more. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Todd Wenzel, Law Offices, and Kelly Norris, broker owner of Gates Estates, Sotheby's International Real Estate. I am Lee W. Miller. Remember, live each day as if your legacy matters, because it absolutely does. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Lee.
Gates Estates Sotheby's International Realty has an amazing team of locally experienced and knowledgeable agents that exceed the high standards and qualifications necessary to assure the ultimate goal of assisting clients buying or selling homes throughout the entire Napa Valley and beyond. Whether now or sometime in the future, remember to consider Gates Estates Sotheby's International Realty, the luxury brand with the local focus that you deserve for any real estate related matters. Visit GatesEstatesSIR.com to connect when it makes sense for you, or call 707-944-0888. That's 707-944-0888.
DRE number 01874685.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.
Broadcasting live from South Napa Century Center.